Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, Mr. James Fox. How are you, James?
Good man. What's up? Yeah, it looks we got our like show programmed already here, it looks like in the comment section. So that's good.
Yeah, no doubt. Holy cow. So we had the trade deadline come up this last week, and I know I speak for probably most White Sox fans when you say that it was underwhelming. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just kind of thought they'd do a little bit more, obviously. I mean, I think there's reasons for like no Mike Talkman, and we can get into that if you want. There's reasons for no Luis Robert. But I mean, some of the other guys, like the relievers, if there was any interest at all, I think, like I understand that your Steven Wilsons and Brandon Eichert and these guys like have control, right? But like, do you really want them on next year's team necessarily? You know what I mean? Like, it's just not something where it's like that huge of a deal. Like if you could get two guys you like in the low levels and trade one of those guys and then call up Peyton Paulette or Wickham Gonzalez instead or one of these other, I mean Owen White's up right now. And they've added like four relievers this week to Charlotte's roster. And like obviously like none of those guys are as interesting as some of the guys that we've been kind of wanting to see all year. So, I mean, look, I understand, like, if there's literally nothing coming in return for Michael A. Taylor and you want to just keep him, like, that's fine. And, I think that we can get into Talkman in a minute, but, and Robert for sure. Like, that's the Robert thing is very controversial. I know, like, I've kind of gone back and forth on this, so I can clarify my stance now, in a minute, but. Man, this is hard for people to understand, especially old baseball writers.
So the deals that did happen before the deadline, the White Sox traded Austin Slater for Gage Zeal, who I saw in person last night in Winston-Salem. We'll get into that in a minute. But then the other one, which was and the fact that this is the only other one is kind of obviously we're gonna get into the individuals here in a moment, but Adrian Hauser got traded to the Rays for Curtis Meade, Davitt, and Peeples, two relievers who are in Charlotte now. And they just brought Curtis Meade up because Miguel Vargas went to the IL and with what was it, oblique. And they pitched an inning each yesterday. I did not get a chance to go through and watch it because I am in North Carolina, and the whole streaming and highlights thing has kind of taken a little bit of a backseat to actually going to games, which I know, shocking. But your thoughts on the let's start with the Austin Slater trade. What were your thoughts on that?
Yes, I mean, I liked both of those deals, which is like one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to see them make another one, right? I think like Getz has made some bad trades. I think we can say it, or underwhelming trades, right? I think you and I are both kind of Drew Thorpe guys, but the rest of that package like doesn't look very good, right? And the bummer one wasn't great, and some of, but like the ones that they've made recently with their basically full front office, right? With like they didn't have all these guys in place before, right? You didn't have Ryan Fuller, you didn't have David Keller, who's technically the international director, but not really. He's like one of the top lieutenants, right? So like I think they've done interesting stuff this year, which is why I kind of thought we'd see Steven Wilson for something or Brandon Eichert for something or whatever. I think the two trades they made were fine. I don't know if Gage Zeal's ever gonna pitch in the big leagues, but you traded Austin Slater. Like it does, like, you traded a $1 million short side platoon outfielder who's really good in that role, by the way, for a guy that's gonna be in the top 25 of your system, and you can get more into like, that specific player, obviously. But I mean, yeah, like you got something useful for a guy that like wasn't gonna be here next year. That's fine. The Adrian Hauser part of it, I'd love to know what else was on the table. Like supposedly they were working with the Cubs. I had heard from somebody pretty solid that like one of the names being talked about from the Cubs is Jordan Wicks, and the Cubs declined to do that. I don't know if that was like a deal breaker for the Sox and they preferred Curtis Mead or whatever. So I kind of like that trade, right? Because like if you can't get a top prospect and like your options are a couple of guys from A-ball or I know, or like top, like former top 50 prospect who failed, who has less than 400 at bats in the big leagues. Like, I think I'd rather go for that, right? I've always kind of liked Curtis Mead, and we'll see, right? I think he needs runway. I think, you know, similar to Miguel Vargas, where he was on the Dodgers, Mead was on the Rays, playing first, playing second, playing third, playing short, being not that important, right? Where you're just kind of filling in a bunch of different spots. I think he probably needs some more runway than that. He underwent a swing change. He's been pretty good since June. So I hope we see him here. I like that one. The other two pitchers aren't prospects, but, you know, I mean, it's a pitching org. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Ben Peoples at some point in the big leagues, right? But, you know, that doesn't mean that he needs to be a top 30 guy. These are just two guys who they think can help them at Charlotte, and you add them to the pile of, I guess, relief pitching depth, because even the other guy, Davitt, is – I don't know if they're going to start him or not. He's started in the past.
Yeah. I wanted to bring this up that Uncle Ted brings up here. Says that the Yankees have the best pitching lab around. And I don't know if they have the best one, but they use Eric Cressy, who also worked with Tanner McDougal, which if you hadn't noticed, Tanner McDougal has been absolutely shoving here this year. And that comes, you know, after working with Cressy. And, you know, I watched Gage Seal yesterday. Kind of reminded me of Riley Gowans, who came from the Bummer trade, and basically the only thing that's still here, you know, that's worth actually, I guess he is literally the only thing that's still here from that Aaron Bummer trade. The velo is a little bit lower than Gowans, you know, but the movement on the pitches looks nice and everything. So there is that.
Yeah, the Yankees always have prospects to trade. So they take a ton of college pitching, and they usually make those guys better, and then they trade them. They have a bunch of Rule 5 guys every year because of it. They also always have catchers. Like, one of their focuses on the international market is they just sign a bunch of catchers, and they're usually pretty good. And they used one who was, like, a pop-up prospect this year who's going to probably be a top 100 guy, Flores. He was the main return for Bednar to Pittsburgh. They traded like four catchers, I think, and a whole bunch of, you know, pitchers like similarly ranked to Zeal, and they basically remade their entire bullpen doing it.
Yeah. Moving to the Curtis Mead trade, I mean, you know, since he got traded over to the White Sox, he's 4-for-7 with like a 1500 OPS. So he clearly they traded for Babe Ruth.
Yes. Well, so here's the issue I have. The one issue, like, I think he has to play second base. Right. So, like, does that mean Colson has to play third base and Mydroth has to play short? Like, do you just kind of put them all in a bunch of different spots and figure it out? Like, I don't really know. You know, I feel like the Sox aren't in a position where they can turn down potential upside. So, like, it is what it is, right? But it's still kind of weird that I don't think he can play third, like, as a regular, because his arm's, like, not that great. Tampa was playing him at first. He's not going to have the power to play first base. So that, yeah. So his best opportunity to be a regular is second. But so is Mydroth, and so is, you know, maybe a prospect that, you know, is in Double-A killing it right now that we're going to maybe talk about later. I mean, they just have all these second basemen. So, you know, here's another one.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, like we went from complaining that the White Sox didn't have any up the middle talent to now we have logjam,
yeah,
in the system and on the major league roster with all this middle of the field talent. You know, I don't really know what to make of it, and I eventually, you know, you end up having to, you know, get rid of some of these guys, but I don't know. You obviously don't want to get rid of them for nothing. So,
no, and I think
where do you go?
Yeah, no, you can't lose them for nothing. I mean, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, remember when, like, they tried to fill second base with somebody new every year, and the stat went around that they didn't have like a positive WAR second baseman like since like a Gucci or so. It was like a Gucci until one Yolmer Sanchez year where he was like one and a half WAR because of defense. Right. Yeah. But he still is like, you know, like a 1.5 WAR season. Right. But that was like their best second base season since like Tadahito Iguchi. And now, like, yeah. I think Mydroth will be, I haven't looked, but Mydroth's got to be like a positive, you know, like 2 WAR player or something on the season. But
yeah,
now they got a whole bunch of guys.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Mydroth's out right now, so.
But he's not on the DL, right?
Right.
Yeah. So maybe that's your Tim out. I don't know. I kind of feel like they would have DL'd him already, but it is the White Sox, and they do weird stuff with the injured list. So, like, they're on the West Coast. I mean, obviously, Vargas is on the IL, and it's an oblique, so who knows when we're going to see him again. And they chose to go with Curtis Meade over Tim Elko. I don't know. Like, you could have given Tim Elko first base every day.
He just got put on a rehab assignment, though, 2 days ago. So
right. Yeah. But he's been on the IL for 22 days. So he's, I think, right? So he's technically could return.
Yeah.
If they felt like he was, like, ready, I guess. So you want to hammer out, like, some, we have some stuff to do, but not a ton. Like, we had a lot of questions in here. So I don't know. You want to get into like what he didn't do? I guess we kind of didn't talk about that.
Who's
the elephant in the room. That is Luis Robert.
Yeah. So, you know, the one guy that everybody thought that for sure would bring back something.
Yes.
At least, I mean, I guess you would think that Hauser would bring back something as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Robert doesn't get traded. You know, we've heard stories about GMs looking at him as a short-term rental and the White Sox valuing him as a, you know, a couple-year,
yep, you know, obligation, right?
So they don't end up making a deal with anybody, don't find any suitors that, you know, valued him the same way, and he's still here. So your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what happened makes a lot of sense to me. I just, like, I'm all, like, if you go look at my Twitter about, like, Luis Robert, like, I'm, like, was all over the place for, like, a week, right? Because, like, I have tweets that say, like, trade this guy for whatever you can get, like, whatever. But there was, like, a huge piece of, like, context that, like, I didn't have. Like, I just, like, didn't think it was even an option to pick up the option, right? So if that's, like, on the table and you're Chris Getz, like, we would have killed him if they took a Cedric Mullins return. Like, the Orioles traded Cedric Mullins to the Mets for 3 minor league relief pitchers. Like, if that was the Robert trade, like, we're fine with that? I don't think we are. I think there's a lot of people like, oh, get rid of him and get what? Like, is $20 million too much? Probably. But is it too much for you? No. Like, their only commitment is Andrew Benintendi's $17 million. So you pick up Robert, your payroll's at $37 million with 2 players. Everybody else is arb or pre-arb. Jeff Passan was on 670 with Danny Parkins the other day when he did the Radiothon thing. And so Passan explained it away as like, look, it's a $2 million buyout anyway. He thinks that Robert, unencumbered on the open market, would have got a 1-year deal for $15 million. So if it's 20,
yeah,
who cares? Like, and you're the White Sox, like in the position they're in. Now, look, I don't know what the White Sox are planning because like, he's definitely not going to be on the 2028 Chicago White Sox, right? So is this, you hope he keeps doing what he's doing, you pick up the option, and then you try to trade him this winter, and they think these garbage offers that they were getting right now, they could just do that at next year's deadline? I don't really know. Like, when Chris Getz says, like, oh, they really value him, and, like, that's true, but he's also, like, not going to be here the next time they're really good, right? So this is still, like, hey, we can't trade him for that, so we're, like, not going to. The thing that I found nuts, like, immediately is guys like Bob Nightingale and Bruce Levine who are like, oh, that was stupid because you can't pick up the option. And it's like, well, they're very clearly picking up the option. Like, I mean, Chris Getz, like, basically said it. He was like, yes, we're planning on him being here. So, and if we weren't, like, maybe we would have acted differently. Like, yeah, that's code for, like, if you had to trade him, they would have dumped him for you know, kind of what I was expecting, like not very much, but they clearly didn't have to do that and they don't want to. And I'm kind of glad they didn't if they don't have to.
My favorite tweet from the last couple of days, pretty much all of Twitter, but the one made by you that said, if Chris Getz if the White Sox do not pick up the option, Chris Getz should be fired.
He should be.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, but the responses that tweet got, about an hour worth of laughs.
Nice.
Out of it.
Well, because I've heard, so this is what I've heard, right? I've heard people say, like, oh, well, you get to the end of the year and you figure it out. No. Yeah. That decision had to be made Thursday. Are you picking it up? Yes or no? Can you pick it up? Are you willing to pick it up? Yes. If that answer is yes, okay, then don't trade him. If that answer is no, then you have to trade him for whatever your crappy offer is. So once they decided to not do that, barring like him getting hit by a bus or like some sort of like long-term injury that's going to hurt 26, like you got to pick that thing up. Like they don't have a choice. Like they're picking it up.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much, you know, I saw your opinion and understood it immediately that, you know, if they just are going to lose him for nothing, despite, you know, how he finishes the season, it really doesn't matter because you pretty much, you know, tied your wagon to him because you didn't trade him.
Well, could you imagine now it's like, oh yeah, we'll just decline it and get nothing. Okay. Well, the three relievers that the Mets got that the Orioles got for Cedric Mullins are better than nothing. It's just, not particularly good, right? And my guess is after seeing those trades, that's like what he was being valued at. Like, I'm sorry, like, but like I understand. I know Robert's shortcomings. I think we know them better than any, like, you know, not us too, but like us as like the White Sox fan, like collective. Like, enjoy Harrison Bader. Like, he's not Luis Robert. Like, Luis Robert could win you a playoff series, right? Like, Harrison Bader's fine. He's, you know, good defense, you know, whatever. But like, you know, Luis Robert as the fifth best player in the Phillies lineup, I think could have been awesome. But one of the things you said, like the big sticking point with this whole thing, teams that wanted him were treating him as like a rental, like half year rental. And the White Sox were trying to trade him like a guy with 2.5 years of control. And it was just never going to line up. And in hindsight, all the reports are pretty funny about it.
Agreed. Trying to think if is there anything else that we want to go into about this, about the trade deadline?
Well, I think Talkman is in. So you could have traded Mike Talkman, right? What could you have gotten? Like something in between, maybe like a Curtis Mead and a Gage Zeal for Mike Talkman, right? Yeah. The thing that Chris Getz said that made the most sense to me is, like, since he's arm eligible, you just don't have to make the decision right now. So at the end of the year, right, 5 days after the World Series, you have to pick up Luis Robert's option. With Mike Talkman, you don't have to do anything. The tender deadline's like in like late November, mid to late November. And even then, you can trade him before the tender deadline to, like, say Houston loves him, right? You can trade him to Houston and then they can tender him. Like, you have time. I've also heard, like, just that Mike Talkman didn't want to go anywhere, and one of the reasons why he didn't want to go anywhere, and people have said that he has like a sick kid. His kid is fine from what I understand, but like she was born, and he's talked about this, I think, now. She had like a cleft palate. So there's like all sorts of like medical stuff, and they know like the doctor's here and he's from Palatine and his family. So he just said like, hey, like I'd rather not go, right? Look, like if Chris Getzer's being offered a top 100 prospect for Mike Talkman, like I think he still would have traded him, even though Mike Talkman wanted to stay here.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, but, Mike, I got to do what I got to do.
But I mean, if it's a couple of guys that later on this week, you and I are trying to fit in like the back end of a top 30 list, like you can probably get that in the off season.
Yeah. My thoughts is,
they like his leadership and the stuff that he's like provided this year too.
Yeah. That's the thing. You get a professional at bat. You know, his legs have kind of have left him at this point. The speed's not very good. It doesn't move that well in the outfield. But, you know, as you saw with that Colson Montgomery play at third base that could have, you know, saved the game the other night. He hit his cutoff man, which, you know, seems to be a like a plague in Major League Baseball, guys that just don't make the correct baseball play when they're supposed to do it. They try and play hero ball and end up throwing the ball all over the place, you know. So it's nice to see a professional baseball player, and the fact that he's highly regarded just as a human being in the clubhouse, and the younger guys tend to gravitate toward him. That's great, you know, like that's just icing on the cake.
Yeah, you know what's like one thing that's like super lame that I've always hated because I'm like a nerd? I used to love waiver trades. I thought it was like the coolest, like, oh, this guy's on waivers and he cleared. Now he can be, or like, hey, this team claimed him. Like you have 2 days to make, like, I thought those things were awesome. And it was usually like, you would never get anything that great in return. It was just more like, hey, this is awesome. Like you can make it. Like, I think, like Yu Darvish was like one of the best waiver trades ever. Or like one of the biggest, I think Verlander was too, the first time he got traded, like from Detroit to, the Sox have a lot of guys right now that they could, like Aaron Civale right now. Like, you don't, you could trade him a week from now, but you're not allowed to. He looks awesome right now. Like, I don't know if that's like the Cats lab, but like his curveball is disgusting. Like, you know, and it kind of stinks that you can't deal him. That he's just going to kind of be wasting away on this White Sox team. And I know they need innings or whatever. And maybe you try to bring him back or who knows, right? But that's a guy that you wish you could have moved. But it just seemed like they needed a couple more weeks to like turn him into like his fully formed version here, basically. Yeah. Alex Rios. Well, yeah. So what happened with Alex Rios, they could still do actually. So Alex Rios was like put on waivers and the Sox claimed him. And And the Blue Jays were like, okay, yeah, take the contract. So like in theory, that could still happen. Right. So, if you went and you found like your equivalent guy, like, you know, like say like Carlos Correa, right? Like he just went to Houston. Like if the Twins were to put Carlos Correa on waivers and somebody claimed him, like they could have him for nothing. You just can't make a trade anymore.
Right. Speaking of Civale, you know, like as far as his curveball, the one thing I was worried about is because not this start, but the last start, it was a weird start time. And half the field was in shadow and the other half of the field was not because of the weird starting time. And I was wondering if his curveball looking so good and getting so many whiffs was because of that. But because you see him again and that wasn't, you know, wasn't an issue at all and it was still good. Now I'm good. You know, like he looks pretty decent. Can't complain.
So there was another, we can wrap up here, Robert. Like, Oh my God.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, that needs to happen. But there was a question from baseball tossed about Robert asking about a qualifying offer. So here's the thing. I don't think that's going to happen because of how much it would be. But yes, like essentially the White Sox could decline Robert's option for $2 million and then offer him a qualifying offer. And if he declines it and signs elsewhere, the Sox would get a pick after the comp B round for him. The problem is if he accepts it, I think the qualifying offer is $23 million. So you'd be paying him effectively $25 million next year, which I don't think they'll do.
My draft played second today. I was thinking he was injured for a few days. He's back.
Yeah.
Already.
He got hit on the hand.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. All right. So, it was mentioned here, can we DFA Josh Rojas, please? Now, where do you stand on that? Because I know that one of the things that they really do like about Josh Rojas is the clubhouse leadership. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't necessarily be a reason to have him around and just not play him. But at that point, like, do you just get rid of him? I mean, I don't know.
My guess is they want to play him a little bit and then put him on waivers and see if anybody will like pick up the rest of the contract, like before you would DFA him basically. Cause like if you DFA him, like I think you're cause you can't trade him. Right. So you're basically like on the hook for the contract, but if somebody wants him, like maybe somebody, I don't think anybody's going to, Like, he shouldn't play anymore. Like, whether he's on the team or not, I think is a different story. I don't think he needs to be like starting ever, but they've played him pretty consistently, like against right-handed pitching. I mean, if you have Meade up here and Mydroff, you know, and Vargas comes back. I mean, so Vargas is being out for a little bit, like that might have like helped Rojas a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, even like, look, if they want to bring Elko back, I mean, what are your options there? Your options are going to be either send Curtis Meade back down probably or DFA Josh Rojas. So it might come to a head here at some point.
Yeah. And it's kind of that about that time period, you know, usually after the trade deadline, the guys that you don't want are usually the first guys to go. And then you start bringing up your young guys. So,
well, there's some pitchers too. Like I know like Tyler Alexander has like done good work for them, but like, I don't need to see that guy again.
Not
there's
today.
Just, you know what? Right. Like there's just like no reason for, like, he's a veteran free agent at the end of the year. Like you can make the argument with Steven Wilson and Brandon Eichert and some of these other guys, like they have years of control. The Sox are going to tender them contracts. You know, even like Tyler Gilbert and Cam Buser, those guys, like in theory, will be back on the 40 man next year. Tyler Alexander, and I know like Altavilla just went on the IL, but both of those two guys, and Altavilla's been fine, right?
He has, yeah.
I just would rather see Pablo Paulette. You know, like it's just he's not going to be on next year's Sox team. So like, what are we doing? You can make the same Michael Taylor argument. Now it's not like they're, you know, they have a ton, like he's not blocking anybody, right?
Yeah.
But like, I don't need to see Michael Taylor like playing that often.
Yeah. And like, as far as like Michael Taylor, the person goes, I'd like him a lot. Seems like a great dude. And the guys in the clubhouse love him. I mean, like, that's the thing is I think that they've done a much better job this time around of picking up guys that, are good for a clubhouse culture, as opposed to the guys that we've seen in the past where it seems like they amassed, you know, like four or five guys that other teams had deemed a problem in the clubhouse and brought them all together and put them in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, no. What do you make of like the, I mean, it's just been described as like Mike Tauchman had a team meeting before like the Pittsburgh series and was basically like, you know, we've preached patience and that's great, but like we've taken too many fastballs, swing at fastballs. And they're what, like 11-5 cents or something. Like they're just like murdering the baseball.
Yeah. I mean, this is just another thing, you know, is that, and I know that, you know, Venable is supposedly also one of those guys that said that, you know, we need to be hitting fastballs more. And, I mean, I don't know why this needs to be said, that when somebody throws something that's more or less straight at you, you hit it. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know why they were hunting for sliders or whatever the heck they were doing beforehand.
Well, supposedly, they were like top five in the league in swing decisions, but had a terrible offense.
Right.
So, like, something happened. Like, and it could be as simple as, like, there's a bunch of kids on this team that like weren't on last year's team. They don't care what happened last year. Like, you know what I mean? Like this is like not a cloud hanging over them because they don't know that they're supposed to be terrible. Right. So some of it's that, but it was, and some of it is, look, like you played Pittsburgh and teams keep starting lefties against you for some reason. Right. Like that's aided part of it, but they look completely different offensively.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the team just looks way more locked in and looks like they're not grasping at straws all the time. I mean, they're kind of going up there with a purpose. And in our chat that we have, you know, we're talking about Ryan Fuller, you know, helping Colson Montgomery and his time in Arizona. He comes back here and he's got seven home runs
with today's. Yeah. And there's some stuff there. I mean, Colson's OBP's 305, right? But he's got a 130 WRC plus because his isolated power is like something insane, right? And his BABIP's like 260 or 270. So do you think it's Fuller or like somebody in his department or like a big league hitting coach that, you know, that brings up the torpedo bat idea. Like, how does that, like, it makes sense, like, now. Like, you're getting completely jammed inside, use this bat, right?
Yeah.
But then, it, like, it's worked so far.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, and they did it with Jacob Gonzalez as well.
He doesn't have as long a leverage, though, but, I mean.
No, he doesn't, but if you look at his, you know, body-wise, his arms and his legs are long and his torso's not really all that big. So, I mean, like, I get it. Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things that, that's why these guys in, you know, when they brought it up, when it was a new thing at the beginning of the year this year, you know, it was guys talking about the fact that they couldn't get to the pitch on the inside as well, and they were getting busted in on the label. So they moved the sweet spot down towards the label, and it helped them hit a little bit. And, you know, if that's what's going to help him do what he needs to do until they finally just decide to stop pitching him in all the time. Cause you know, that's like the thing. I mean, I kind of, speaking on this, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, like Jose Abreu for, you know, like there was just a period of time where pitcher.
Warning: the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit MidAmerica shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Were like, you know what, we can't put it anywhere middle or out against Jose Abreu because he's going to murder us. So they started jamming him in all the time. And this went on for like, you know, months at a time. And he'd finally make an adjustment and then he'd start hitting again after his, you know, month-long slump or whatever it was. You wonder what would have happened if he was around for the torpedo bat, you know?
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of guys. Like, you know, I mean, how do you think Dan Plesac feels like looking at like the money that some of these like terrible relievers are making? I mean, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, why didn't I play then?
Yep. What is this? I saw something here I wanted to bring up. Where did it go? Baseball says he doesn't need to see Jolks.
Yeah. So I think that was just, you know, like they wanted a, like Venable likes righty lefty matchups. So like, I think he wanted a Slater replay. They got a lot of left-handed hitting outfielders. So I think that was mostly just, you know, if a lefty starts, like you might see Jolks or, you know, there's just certain situations where, you know, like Talkman, Benintendi, like all these guys, they just like don't want them facing lefties necessarily. And Venable's job is to win baseball games.
Vince says the Monty Monster.
I don't like it. That one's bad.
What'd you think of the Big Smooth?
Fine. Yeah, the Angels came up with that, didn't they?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's their play by play team.
Yeah.
I thought that was a funny one.
Yeah, the Big Smooth is interesting. I'd like to hire Wayne Randazzo is the play by play guy for the Angels, and he's from here. Maybe White the Sox can hire him. Yeah, or do you think
I was wondering why they let him walk?
Well, do you think John Schriffen and Steve Stone are ever going to work together again. Because it seems kind of weird right now.
Yeah, it is kind of strange.
They haven't worked
together
in a while.
I'm going to tell you, I liked having Plesak. I mean, he's, you get some name pronunciation that are wrong every once in a while. You get the players that are wrong every once in a while, but that guy, he makes me laugh, and he's got life and, experience, which is nice as well.
Yeah, because it's been weird. Because, if Stone is there, it's been, Connor. But if it's, but it's been Plesak or Gordon with Schriff. So I don't know. I think it's not harmonious up there. So
maybe Schriffen and Stone had a fight over one of the rolling chairs like the guys in the Detroit play by play booth did years ago.
Yeah, that would be great. Vince Randazzo was with the Mets on radio, and then he got the full time Angels TV job.
To answer this, so Thorpe hasn't started throwing yet. He's rehabbing. Yeah, just stopped back in Chicago for the weekend to say hello, and that's why he was here.
Does he still have the incredible mustache?
I didn't see him.
Yeah. I still think Drew Thorpe's gonna be good, man.
That change. His changeup is disgusting. So. I don't know. We'll see. Kevin doesn't like Dan Plesak. No. Well, you can't please everybody, I guess, right?
Kevin,
was the last one.
Kevin, I think chatter is strong. Is there chatter that Stone and Triffin aren't getting along? Not from anyone I would deem credible, but yes. Yes,
just a thought, if you notice how this stuff is lining up, it makes sense that maybe there's an issue.
None of the White Sox burner Twitter food accounts have said anything yet, but there's some stuff out there that they've had some issues. Like, we'll see, right? I kind of thought they'd move on and hire a real play-by-play broadcaster when they were good, quietly, this guy's here now. I don't know. It's definitely easier to deal with when the team's better. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So to answer that question, Jamie, there's probably about 9 or 10 guys that are coming back next year. And we're not talking all major league guys, but we're talking, throughout all the levels that are going to be.
Yeah.
You're
going to have Thorpe and Mason Adams and Kai Bush, in the big league mix of some sort at some point.
Blake Larson.
Juan Carella's out. And then on the minor league side, Blake Larson's the big one. You'd like to see him get back. There was other, Aldrin Bautista is supposed to return this year.
He had a fractured stress elbow
in his elbow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think sometimes ends up being Tommy John, and then you miss more time. But
yeah, it was nice. Connor McCullough came back.
I saw that. He looks good too.
He's looked good. He looks exactly like what Connor McCullough looked like before. So that's good.
And it's kind of like we suspected on Schultens. Did you see that today? So the Sox rehabbed him,
PFA'd.
Basically kept paying him the whole time. He must be a great dude. And then they took him off the 60 man and optioned him because he had options. But today they made two waiver claims from the Brewers and they DFA'd Schultens. My guess is he clears and just goes to Charlotte, but who knows?
That's my guess as well. He's been, he's had some rough ones in the last couple weeks. So
what are your thoughts on adding 4 pitchers to the Knights? And so 2 of them are prospecty, right? The 2 guys from the Rays trade, Peoples has good stuff. The other guy's kind of a sinker baller, soft tosser type guy. But then 2 waiver claims from the Brewers are super interesting. Brian Hudson, those guys were in the Brewers bullpen last year in a contender's bullpen and they were good. And this year they've been kind of bad. Our guy Dylan, made a good point in our group chat, just that, what is it? Hudson, right? Hudson threw 25% cutters last year and was pretty nasty, and he hasn't thrown any this year. So I don't know if that's a Walker McKinven not being there change potentially. But we'll see. And Ian, obviously, will be watching the Knights play here again at some point. And like, we'll see how many cutters he throws.
Yeah, I'm curious. I really want to see what their pitch mix looks like and see what's going on here. I mean, I will say, like, I love that Baseball Savant is available for AAA, but man, not having it in the levels below is super frustrating. Dude, almost as frustrating as having different baseballs in those leagues as well.
There are some guys right now that the Sox have that I would love to see that data on. Like, you saw Christian Opper in person.
Yeah.
And look, anybody can watch that kid and be like, this guy's disgusting, right? Like, it is. But still, like, having the, like, what Mathias Lacombe is doing, or even having, like, the data on McDougal right now, you know, like, you know, it's really important for, like, guys that, like Yobel Rodriguez, right, who's getting people out in the DSL, but we've heard he's throwing, like, 90 or 91, right? Like, yeah. It's like kind of like Luis Reyes is another, you know, is another guy in the low minors where just, you know, having data would be interesting.
Yeah, I want to bring something up here that baseball brings up here. He said, why did the Caden Connor promos go so under the radar? So they've been doing a thing here, and they've done it mostly with catchers. And you'll notice, you'll see Weston Eberle go here. You'll see Juan Gonzalez go here. You'll see Colby Smelly go here. You'll see, like, you've seen these guys move all around, and they've done it a little bit with first base and corner outfielders, just a little bit. And I think that that's what they're doing with Caden, because Caden actually got promoted like 2 weeks ago to AAA, and then he went back, and now he's back. So I think that's probably why it went under the radar this time, because it happened a couple of weeks ago, just briefly for like 2 days, and then he was back. So I think that's why.
So Kevin had a question, just like top 20 prospects, who we might see. I mean, I assume that we'd see some bullpen guys, but I don't know that they're necessary. Like, you could see Peyton Paulette whenever. Iriarte hasn't been very good. Obviously, Wickelman we've seen. I think the best answer is probably still Tanner McDougal. I think we're going to see him at some point. Is it in a starting role? I don't know. But just with him being Rule 5 eligible, I mean, it's a big Brian Bannister component of what he does to, like, get these guys, like, some work late. So I don't know what the innings limit is on Tanner McDougal, but whatever it is, like, the last 15 or, you know, whatever can be in the big leagues, I would imagine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that'll be fun. And that'll be fun, man. Because we, like, even coming into this year, like, Ian's watched Tanner McDougal forever. I loved him as a prospect. You know, we've talked about, like, shortcomings is strong because he came back from Tommy John, and, you know, he'd walk too many guys, right? But his stuff was disgusting. So the fact that he's, like, knocking on the door of the big leagues is awesome. Because I think, quickly, like,
too,
Keith Law was the only guy this offseason who, like, basically had him, like, seventh or eighth in the system. Like, Keith Law listed, like, six dudes and then was like, oh, the guy most scouts talk about is Tanner McDougal. And it was kind of, like, just this offhand thing. And then McDougal shoved all year. So I don't know if they need to see him in Charlotte. To, you know, whatever, because some guys they seem to want to do that and some guys they don't. But yeah, no, he's I think he's definitely the most interesting of the guys that you might see.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. I don't think there's anybody else that I would probably put above him in a guy to make a run this year. And I don't see why they would want to see him in Charlotte. I mean, like, when you make guys look that dumb in Double A,
yeah,
you know, I don't really see a point in it. So,
well, it's only like if you, I mean, we had Jim Callis on, right?
Yeah,
the baseball and the automatic strike system, right? But like, if he's gonna come up this year, he's not gonna see that in the big leagues either,
right?
So who cares, right? So to me, I bring him up straight from Double A, let him throw fuzz out of the bullpen. And he's in the mix for a rotation job in the big leagues out of spring training next year. And then if he has to start in Charlotte, fine. Like, that's fine. He's part of your big league team in some capacity at some point in 2026.
Yeah, this is the ultimate question. What do you do with all this pitching?
You can never have enough, man.
Never have enough. But at some point, you know, like you would think that they would, like we said this 2 years ago, and then last year, you know, you end up, you know, leading into this year, you end up having, you know, a dozen guys go down with TJ.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, but they've been good at going to find guys who can get you through a minor league season, though, right? You have your Hale Sims, you have all these dudes that they just, and those guys aren't necessarily going to be White Sox, right? But it's like if prospects go down, like you can find pitchers. I mean, look at Birmingham again, right? Birmingham's going to try to win another title.
Yep.
And they're not, yeah, they're not, well, they're not loaded with prospects, like not by any means, right? So I think one of the, like the Sox have dialed back these last two drafts. They're not pounding college starters where you don't have places for these guys to go. I think, like, you know, after we're done with our ranking, and I hope we're, you know, I'm hoping to have just missed out Monday, August 11th, followed by the top 30. We're working on it now. After that, I might try to do like something for myself, which is just like a projection for next year type of thing, just to kind of see the logjam and guys are going to be coming back. But yeah, I mean, they've taken a lot more hitters. So it's not like, you know, you have five college starters to insert in the Kannapolis rotation and guys that aren't ready for Winston. I think it'll probably work itself out. And some guys are going to have to go to the bullpen, like we've talked about. Like, it's just they take some of these guys who they think like have a chance to start. You know, like Seth Keener is a good example, right? Like Seth Keener has struggled, and like maybe that guy just converts to relief. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You got a lot of arms, but it's better than not having enough arms. That's for sure.
All right. So Vince has got one that I want to talk about later. I want to talk about that later after we get through the White Sox.
You want to do Preller at the end? That's fine. Yeah. We can do like a takeaways from the trade deadline type thing. Yeah.
Yeah, there's three things I want to talk about. One of them here is one that Grimtal brings up. What happened to Martin Perez?
No, he's fine.
He just made a appearance yesterday in Charlotte, pitched 2.2 innings, gave up two runs. But for the most part, he looked pretty good. The changeup still looks good. So
it's funny. They said he was throwing like 87 in his ramp up. I'm like, that's what he throws anyway.
Yeah, look any different. Look any different.
Like, back to my point then on waiver trades, how would you love to have Aaron Civale and Martin Perez right now to just, like, send to a contender? Like, you don't think there's a contender that would, like, take one of those guys just to, like, give their other guys, like, a rest? Like, those guys are super valuable, and you can't trade them for anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and I don't know why nobody would want something like that to eat their innings as they're, you know, like a top playoff team. Like, I just don't know why they didn't want that.
I am curious to see how they're going to use Martin, because I do think at some point here, like Burke, it's going to be like 3-4 inning starts here. Like, these guys are getting close to their limit. Like, you're going to be using, like, they might do the, like, Burke was pretty good today, right? I didn't watch today's game. But like, they've used him as an opener a couple of times now, you know, so Shane Smith kind of bounced back. So, you know, they do have a 5-man rotation right now without Perez.
Yeah. Also it's mentioned here and said, Noah Syndergaard got released today. He didn't look all that good. Not that that should be really all that surprising, but yeah, he got lit up pretty good.
Yeah, not very good. He's just,
yeah.
And there's no way that they're going to, like, they have five starters plus Perez plus some other kids, right? Like, there's no scenario where Syndergaard was going to be pitching for you outside of trading Savali, trading Hauser, shutting down some, you know, like another guy getting hurt. Like, that, he was like eighth or ninth in the chamber here, and you're not going to need to do that.
I don't even know if he was even that high. I mean, like, unless he came back as like, you know, first 3 years of his career, Noah Syndergaard, he, you know, it's pretty much worthless, because after that he was injured, not any good. So
yeah,
I don't see any.
Well, this has to be the end, right? I mean, you would think.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't see any scenario whatsoever that he was a meaningful part of the rotation at all.
Yeah. Jamie asked about DePino. Yeah, okay.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. So
I talked to seventh rounder out of Rhode Island.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of guys. I talked to the guys in Winston and Kannapolis over the last couple of days, and really they don't know where anybody's going at this point. They will find out over the next 2 days. We know about what Kyle Lodice is, like the one that we've heard rumors about.
Yeah, so apparently Kyle Lodice might be going to Winston-Salem. I checked in with a couple guys. One of the, you know, the late round hitters told me he didn't know, but they're ready to go to an affiliate, and they only know of like one guy headed out right now, which my guess is Lodice. So, probably, I mean, look, it takes a lot of shuffling. Like, go look at the Kannapolis and Winston-Salem rosters, right? If you're going to add seven position players, like, somebody's gonna have to get released, right? So it's not super easy. It seems like a Monday activity, most likely. And hopefully, you know, hopefully we'll hear.
Yeah, we'll see. So before we get to other teams, let's talk about the draft lottery and where the White Sox are. And they are still in the spot right now.
Oh, God, yeah. I think
with how they're playing,
yeah,
it's possible they could get bypassed by at least a couple of teams that are close to them.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like, how many games are they realistically going to win, right? And I know, like, you're not at home right now, so you can't really share. But, like, if anybody wants to go to tankathon.com and click on MLB and just look at the position that, like, the White Sox are 42-70 with a .375 win percentage. And the odds then at the number one, like, the odds would be like basically 26% to land the number one pick. Atlanta's right behind them at 47-63, right? So the Sox still have seven more losses than the Braves do. Pittsburgh's 48-64. The Athletics are 49-65. And then Baltimore's 51. And like, I think, like, Minnesota, who, so they're 52-59, and they're probably gonna like crater. So Minnesota probably gets up into like the top five. I just don't know that the Sox can fall much further than like three, honestly. Because even if the Sox go 500 the rest of the way, you're talking about 67 wins. I don't know. I mean,
I would take that. Anything that's not 100 losses, I would take as a move in the right direction and still keep us in our standing.
But I know that we, like, they were what? They're 11. I can't even remember now. They were like 10. They're like 11-4 or 10-5, something like
11
that.
11-5, yeah.
Like, they're not. I mean, can they go? They can't go 25-25 the rest of the way, can they? Maybe. I guess maybe. They've been playing pretty good.
I mean, that's not really, I mean, their schedule is supposedly, when the All-Star break flipped, they were supposed to have like the third hardest, you know, schedule.
But how many Twins games is that? Like, yeah.
But then after the trade deadline, they reevaluated that whole thing and they went down to 12th.
12th, yeah.
So it's entirely possible that they could rattle off like you know, like a bunch of series wins, and if they do that, they're just going to stack it. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I think Arizona and Minnesota are probably the two teams that'll like rise up in the, you know, the thing here. Oakland, I think, is playing kind of well. Miami's like good, kind of, right? And the Braves have nothing to play for, and Alex Anthopoulos is smart, so they'll probably be terrible. That's your competition, is likely the Braves and the Pirates. The hot rumor around baseball is that Ben Cherington's like going to get fired any day now. So yeah. I don't know how that affects like the Pirates on field necessarily. You know, but that's, and then Colorado, Washington, and who am I missing? The Angels. None of them really factor in at all because they can't pick in the lottery.
Yep.
I will say though, I just don't really think anybody should be that worried, because it's a, like, even if they have the worst record, like, they could pick sixth or seventh, right? I would try as best as we can, and this is coming from me, people are gonna be like stunned, right? I would just like enjoy your young fun team, and like if they win, you know, like, I'm not gonna be upset like when they lose, but like being upset when they win is kind of ridiculous. If like these guys are,
I would not do that.
If these guys are all like your dudes that are kind of matter.
Yeah, I mean, if they rattled off and got like 70 wins, I would
be
overjoyed because that means that they're playing well. Right. I mean, obviously could, that would be less than ideal for the pick, but
and they could still get a top three pick because this thing is crazy. Like this lottery is nuts.
Yeah,
it's like happening every year.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can get the seventh pick when being in the worst position, you know, in the best position to get first and still be considered winning in the lottery is ridiculous. But I don't want to get into that again. So
you think Justin Ishbia is a sleeper agent? Like he ended like his first role, like he ended the Twins. Like him not buying the Twins just ended the Twins. One of the funny things I saw, like we're gonna get into the trade deadline in a second and then get off of here, but was like people were complaining and blaming the Twins general manager for this, like Derek Falvey. Derek Falvey didn't do this.
Yeah,
like Derek Falvey's owner called him and was like, "Dump everything." Okay, thank you. I will. I'll do what I can. Right? Like
I would love to.
Like imagine being. Did you see the prospect return for Carlos Correa?
Nothing.
So this is a pitcher. It's a pitcher named I think Mike Mikulski, who had a 6+ ERA as a reliever in A ball, who was released already this year and returned. Imagine being the kid, right? Like the dream is dying, right? And like you're probably considering pretty much every week, like whether it's worth still doing this. And then you get traded for Carlos Correa straight up.
Pretty slick.
Yeah. Like that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I think that's kind of interesting that the, you know, the Ishbia is not getting, you know, refusing to buy the Twins and then just watch them kind of torpedo. And, you know, we talked about this in our chat that, you know, I mean, just how crazy it is for the Johnsons and for Steve Cohen, you know, watching Carlos Correa over the last couple of years after they declined it on medicals. And now he gets traded for a, you know, like a 26-year-old pitcher with a 6 ERA or whatever in A ball. It's that's quite something. All right. So moving to other teams for the trade deadline. James, not Sox related. Vince asks, what do you think of Preller again? I love it. Massive balls, takes risks. Just draft and sign more international studs.
Yeah, I think the league needs more AJ Prellers. Like, so I will say, like, it kind of reminded me of like the Addison Russell thing. Not that, like, you know, like nobody could foreshadow like any of like the off field stuff with Russell, right? Yeah. But like I think that like DeVries is probably ranked a little bit too high. Like he's probably a second baseman. He's gonna hit, but yeah, I mean, like it's not shortstop, right? So, like, is he a top 25 prospect in baseball? Absolutely. Is he a top 5 prospect in baseball? Like, probably not, right? Now, does that mean you should trade him for a closer? It's just it's absolutely insane, but I still like it because, like, when you're in Preller's position, like he doesn't care because the way he thinks is like we have another draft and another international period, and I'll just sign a bunch of dudes because he's great at it. AJ Preller. And this is mean, but AJ Preller is like the dude that Ken Williams thought that he was, I think, right? Like, because AJ Preller is like one of the best scouts. Like it, like they draft high school kids every year, and like they're awesome, and they sign the best international guy, and they're awesome, and they have like issues developing these guys, so they can scout,
yeah,
but they don't develop all that great. But they can just use these guys in trades constantly because they have like a bunch of talent in their system. So, yeah, man, like the guys that made the trades, Preller, DePoto, Dombrowski, shocker, right? Like these are the guys that like make moves all the time. Yeah, AJ Preller's awesome. Like if you were the GM of your team, like you'd just be fat. Like for what the purposes of what we do, like it's just like, okay, they literally traded the entire system, like other than their recent draft picks and, the catcher.
Yeah. I mean, I find it very, it seems to me like Preller is like the king of finding and scouting guys that other scouts and talent evaluators are going to think are the best players that are available on the market that never develop into anything. Because it seems like most of the guys that he trades away, I mean, I granted the trade to the Nats with, you know.
Yeah, but you got Juan Soto. But yes, agreed. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. But I mean, like a lot of the time, like most of these guys don't develop
into
anything.
But he's the only guy in the league that would do that.
Yeah.
Like Jed Hoyer. Like, I mean, so like the Cubs are trying to win a World Series theoretically, right? And look, the moves they made, I think, are helpful. I like Mike Soroka. I really like Willie Castro. But like, I don't understand the Moises Ballesteros thing, you know, like, and maybe it's not true, right? Whatever, like Owen Casey, it might be fine, right? And if Owen Casey were like a White Sox prospect, I'd be like, yeah, that's great. Cause like they have like, but like Owen Casey's not going to help the Cubs anytime soon. Like even if Tucker left, Owen Casey can't be your right field. He strikes out 30% of the time in Iowa. Like Moises Ballesteros is a 5'6" like catcher. He rakes, but like they're not going to let him catch, and he can't play first base because he's 5'6". So like he's a DH. Like you're not going to trade a DH for. And look, none of those guys, none of those pitchers were moved, right? And that's what Jed Hoyer said. Oh, none of those guys were moved. Okay, well maybe you should have offered more, and one of them might have been, right? But I don't know. That would be fun. Like if I were a Cubs fan, I would be upset because they just like they didn't. Do enough.
Yeah.
And like, look, they could get in and they could win the World Series because anybody can get in and win the World Series, right? But like, you could like enhance your chances a little bit by going out and doing what everybody kind of thought they were going to do. And instead, they prospect hugged AAA hitters with a team full of like the Cubs have a veteran team of really good players, you know?
Yeah.
And they have a bunch of prospects who are never going to play for them. I don't know. Yep.
Blocked. I mean, they can't bring them up. I mean, unless the guy that's up there turns into a really bad baseball player.
Yeah, like them in Boston are very similar. It's like what are you doing?
Yep. I don't know. Then there's this, and this is the last thing.
I hope so. That would be yeah. So somebody asked about it's like Muniketa Murakami. So I know like maybe Dylan and Elijah could get into this, like because Dylan had some of the data just on his, like, I guess, frightening whiff rates, like in Japan, I guess.
Oh, really?
Apparently.
Hmm.
But he hits freaking tanks and I love him. And he's, yeah, he would be fun. Like, so there's a Japanese guy coming over, big time lefty power hitter. He's 25. So he's like not subject to bonus pools. So, you know, it would be like a, just like a regular big league signing. So I hope they're in the mix. I mean, he's a corner guy, but you know, the lefty power looks fun.
Well, indeed. All right. You good with me walking this out? I don't have my outro,
guys,
to read this time, like normal.
That's fine.
So, you guys have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. Know if you are watching or listening, know that you can find us, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on the YouTubes or the Purple app. If you are looking for our written content, is on futuresox.net. You can also, if you want to support us, you can find a link to our Patreon on our site or on our YouTube profile, channel profile. If you're looking for White Sox highlights, now this week has been a complete anomaly and weird because I'm not home right now. Normally all of our White Sox highlights go up on our Twitter and also on our YouTube channel now. And so if you're looking for that, that's where you find it. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He's James Fox at James Fox 917. Thank you guys so much for coming and hanging out. We appreciate you guys. You guys are awesome. You guys always drive this program, and we appreciate you guys in the community. We appreciate you. Have a great night, and we will talk to you guys.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.